Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the Banca Sistema 2020 full year results presentation. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Gianluca Garbi, CEO of Banca Sistema. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon to everybody. I'm here connected with our CFO, Ilaria Bennati, and Carlo Di Piero, our Investor Relator Director. Let me start by saying that it's almost 1 year since we started to talk about COVID-19, something that nobody probably expected, and for sure none of us was used to deal with such a strong exogenous event. So by saying that, I will also add that what we have done this year was something extraordinary that proved to me the resilience of our bank. We have done many things this year. Among all of them, we were also able to finalize our biggest acquisition in gold and jewelry-backed loans businesses. And we are happy that is now fully integrated in our subsidiary Pronto Pegno. And as I will describe in a few minutes, we were also able to secure a joint venture in Spain where we will be able to enter in a more structured way in the Spanish market. So moving to the slide number two of the presentation that has been made available, let me comment some of the numbers. Despite the negative economic environment caused by the pandemic situation, we have registered a good commercial performance with the recovery on factoring new volume in the last two quarters of the year, and with less big ticket, in particular in tax receivable. If we exclude actually the tax receivable, our turnover was up 10% on a year-on-year basis versus a decline of the factoring market based on the information provided by the Association of Factoring Company that was at minus 11%. Last year, we have purchased some portfolio of Spanish public administration receivable together with ABN Banco. ABN Banco is a Spanish bank specialized on factoring and corporate banking that has also followed the collection on those receivable that we have purchased. The result of this period of experiment was very positive. And at the end of last year, we have set up a joint venture with ABN Banco for the Spanish factoring market with the public administration, in particular on the healthcare side. We decided to enter this market through this joint venture, which is a parenthetical venture 50-50. Investing 1 million, so with a negligible investment. The name of this JV is ABN Sistema Finance, with a quarter in Madrid, and as a general manager has been appointed Bosco Martinez Echevarria, who has considerable experience in the factoring in Spain and was employed by ABN Banco to run this type of activity. The company, the joint venture, will commercialize or will offer to the supplier, to the Spanish public administration, the possibility to sell their receivable, and those receivable will be directly by the two banks, Banca Sistema and ABN Banco, with the same proportion of the joint venture, so another term 50-50. And the collection of the receivable will be taken care by ABN Banco. So we will have a pari passu risk between us and our partner in Spain on the performance of the receivable that we collect, and those receivable will be in the two respective balance sheet on a pari passu basis on a 50-50 percent. As you know, already comment probably in the past, the Spanish market is much smaller than the Italian one, but this with this initiative, I think that we will be able to continue our growth strategy in the factoring to the supplier of the public administration. To move on commenting on the other items, the CQS and CQP outstanding have reached 934 million, an increase of 14% or in year on year, less than the first 9 months of 2020, simply because we decide at the end of last year to sell a portfolio of loan to an Italian player, which is part of a commercial banking group. In 2020, also to make reference to what did go on the overall market, the CQ market performance was negative at minus 8.7% in terms of new lending, while, as I mentioned, we register a positive performance of plus 14%. The gold and jewelry-backed loans outstanding have reached 78 million, with an increase of 4% in 3 months. Clearly, the biggest step of the yearly growth comes from the acquisition of the business unit that I just mentioned at the beginning of this presentation. The total income end up to be equal to 101.5 million, slightly up on a year-on-year basis. The cost of risk was equal to 42 basis points, slightly up on a year-on-year basis, but in line with our expectation. Then Ilaria will comment more on that. The total operating costs were influenced by 2.1 million of non-recurring items related to the acquisition of the business unit, but also that took in consideration the contribution to the Single Resolution Fund that was up 75% versus last year. The net income ended up be 25.8 million, down on a year-on-year. But if we exclude the previously mentioned non-recurring items, the negative component of the PPA from Pronto Pegno, and on the other side also the gain that we had with the sale of the 25% stake in Pronto Pegno, our net income would have been reached 26.1 million. The return on tangible equity is equal to 15.6%. And at the end, we close the 2020 with a strong increase in our Core Tier 1 ratio that reached the level of 12.6%, and the total capital ratio that end up to be equal to 16.1%. Moving to the following slide number 3, as you can see, the factoring outstanding trend show a decrease on a quarter-on-quarter as a combined effect of two main events. So the first one was the turnover on tax receivable that even though we expect to have a more favorable environment in the coming year, when all the suspension of or postponement of payment by the authority, as well as the return to normal turnover by corporate, will allow to increase the acquisition of tax receivable. The second effect was a faster than expected collection, which does not mean that the public administration is now efficient and is paying in time, but simply means that due to the current situation, there's been some attempt by the authority to inject more liquidity to the system, and that has a positive effect in some payment that allow us to increase on one end the collection, but on the other hand, clearly decrease the amount of outstanding. As you can see, in terms of moving to the CQ, the turnover was higher on year-on-year. This could have been even higher than that, but as I mentioned before, we decided to take the opportunity, a favorable, I would say, opportunity, to sell a part of a portfolio at the end of the year. This performance was for sure better than what we could have expected at the beginning of last year when the Italian government has announced the lockdown. And clearly, we expect a better contribution from direct origination coming this year. Following the acquisition of the gold and jewelry-backed loan, now this business represents more than 5% of our total income. And since we integrated the business unit, I'm also happy how the business is now performing. Now, I will leave the floor to Ilaria, and then I will comment the regulatory capital at the end. Ilaria, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Gianluca, and good afternoon to everybody. As usual, I will first comment the balance sheet on slide 4. As shown in the table, total assets are overall down 2% year-on-year, and in particular, we have that loans at amortized cost is now 2.7 billion and is down quarter-on-quarter, mainly due to the downward trend in factoring outstanding, as Gianluca commented. On the other side, both CQ loans and gold jewelry-backed loans are significantly up, both on a quarter-on-quarter basis as well as on a year-on-year basis. The goodwill increase that occurred in Q3, as you remember, was due to the acquisition of the business unit. Goodwill related to this acquisition is slightly down quarter on quarter as a consequence of the final allocation of the purchase price. Govies portfolio is also down quarter on quarter at 873 million with an average duration of 13 months. The sale of Govies that was performed over the quarters allowed us to register significant trading gains, as we'll comment later on with the income statement comments. On the liability side, due to banks, quarter-on-quarter increase is driven by interbanking, while ECB funding is stable. Due to customers' decrease quarter-on-quarter is mainly driven by the decrease in repo as a consequence of the Govies portfolio reduction that has more than compensated the increase in the foreign component of term deposits. That securities quarter-on-quarter decrease is due to the repayment of the senior bond with an outstanding of 175 million, which has been refinanced with different funding sources carrying a lower cost. We now move on to the next page where we discuss the P&L. We start from interest income. 2020 interest income is down 11%, and the drop is driven mainly by lower contribution of factoring in the second half of the year. Factoring now represents 66% of total interest income, while it was 74% in 2019. The lower income from factoring is mostly related to LPI from legal action and to fiscal receivables, which in particular had a stellar performance in the last quarter of 2019. Going more into the details of the LPI contribution, we register the following. The contribution of LPI from legal action now represents 33% of factoring interest income, compared to the 36% in 2019. And in absolute terms, it's now equal to 21.6 million, compared to the 29 million in 2019. The main reason behind the drop is the lower contribution of the update of accrual rates. This is not something new. Indeed, as anticipated during previous calls, the benefit of the update of accrual rates will be lower over time as the statistical model has now stabilized around the current level of accruals. Indeed, the update of the model performed in Q3 has provided accrual rates that were just slightly higher than the previous ones. As a result, the income effect of the change in accrual rates has been 1 million compared to the 5.1 million related to last year. Overall, the accrual component is now worth 10 million, which is down from the 17 million in 2019. On the other side, in the extra collection segment, we've registered a stable performance where the 11.6 million collections compare with the 11.9 million collections in 2019. We have executed the sale of LPI in this quarter as we did in Q4 last year. With regards to fiscal receivables, the contribution to this year's earnings has been 11.4 million compared to the 18.5 million in 2019. The reason behind the drop is twofold. On one side, it's related to lower volumes, as we've already mentioned, and on the other side, it's a consequence of the fact that tax receivables had a particularly strong performance in the last quarter of 2019 due to anticipated collections on large positions. So the relative comparison is not rewarding. The contribution of the CQ business line has been slightly down year on year, due to a larger than expected impact of early repayments on positions that have reached the two-fifths of the contract life and as such have accrued the right to be repaid. Since the past quarter, we started to see a significant contribution of the pawnbroking business, also thanks to the acquisition. The contribution to total interest income of the business line has been 3.1 million. Let's now move on to margins. As you can see from the top right table, adjusted income margin is down year on year, driven by both factoring and CQ. CQ margins seem to have stabilized around the level since over the year, while factoring margins have been impacted by the lower contribution to earnings of LPI and tax receivables, as we have widely commented. However, compared to both the first half and the 9 months result, both factoring and CQ margins are now slightly higher, and in particular, margins on factoring commercial receivables have almost got back to levels seen at the end of 2019, which confirms that really the drop in income generation related to the factoring is only due and driven by LPI and tax receivables. Again, on margins, from now on, we will fully disclose and monitor Goldback Loans business margins, which have set at 13.9% for the full year, by far the highest of all the three business lines. We now move on, as usual, to discuss LPI. The stock of LPIs, which is described in the bottom left table, stands at 155 million, of which 98 million is part of the accrual perimeter. This is down quarter on quarter, mainly due to cash collections. The amount of LPI currently recorded in the balance sheet is 50.1 million, which is stable over the quarter. We now move on to total income on slide 6. Total income in 2020 has registered a minor increase versus last year, with a 1% year-on-year growth, mainly thanks to the contribution of other income, which is treasury activity and the sale of factoring and CQ portfolios, and net commissions, which have more than compensated the drop in net interest income. Indeed, net interest income decreased 8% year-on-year, driven by weaker interest income, as we've commented, while interest expenses are down 20% year-on-year. Total cost of funding is lower year-on-year at 0.6% compared to the 0.8% in 2019, thanks to a good balance between diversification of the funding sources, duration and cost. Net commissions is up year-on-year, thanks to the strong contribution of the gold and jewelry bag business, which generated 2.7 million commission income for the year. Other income is significantly up year-on-year and includes the contributions of the sale of portfolios. In particular, the split is the following. 2.5 million was the gain from the sale of the factoring portfolios and 1.4 million was the gain from the sale of a CQ portfolio. We expect to execute similar transactions in the future on both segments of the business, so we consider this type of revenues as recurring. Other income also includes the contribution of the sale of a portion of the Gozi portfolio for 5.7 million. The overall contribution of the portfolio also includes 4.4 million recorded in the NII for a total of 10.1 million, which compares to the 7 million in 2019. In the pie chart at the bottom of the slide, we represent for the first time the breakdown of the total income contribution of the three business lines, which shows that we were able to achieve further diversification of revenues during 2020. The factoring business continues to represent the lion's share, with a 75.4 million contribution out of 101.5 million total income, although its relative weight has decreased from the 82% in 2019 to 74% this year. The CQ has increased its relative contribution from 16% to almost 20%, and the pawnbroking business has increased its contribution in absolute terms, reaching 5.8 million income generation, as well as in relative terms, moving to a 5.7% relative weight. Now we discuss costs on page 7. I'll only briefly cover this section as the main drivers of the cost trend have been described in past quarters, in particular in Q3 when discussing the integration of the business unit occurred in July. Q4 confirms that the main driver of the cost increase has been the integration of the business unit. Indeed, the personal expenses are up year on year due to higher FTEs following the acquisition. There is also a portion of personal expenses related to the acquisition that are included in the integration costs and therefore are not recurring. Also, administrative expenses are up year on year due to the acquisition. Overall, non-recurring expenses related to the acquisition of the business unit are equal to 2.1 million for the full year. Also, as commented already in previous calls, other expenses item has been impacted by the contribution to the Single Resolution Fund, which came in 900K higher than last year. If we exclude the acquisition and the Single Resolution Fund impact, operating costs are flat on a year-on-year basis. We now move on to the next slide to cover funding. Slide 8. As I mentioned before, cost of funding is lower year-on-year at 0.6% and stable quarter-on-quarter. Funding mix keeps on being balanced between wholesale and retail. The wholesale component is now 41%, slightly down quarter-on-quarter due to the reduction of the repos funding the Gavis portfolio and the redemption of the senior bond, which has been refinanced using other funding sources which carry a lower cost than a capital market issuance. ECB funding is stable at 690 million, of which 491 million is TLTRO 3. Conversely, retail funding is up quarter on quarter due to the growth in term deposit stock after the trough reached in the first half. The average funding cost from this source has dropped by 30 basis points since the end of 2019 due to subsequent managed rate adjustments. We have recently revised interest rates for this year funding, so the average cost should continue to trend down also in 2020. We now turn to slide 9 to discuss asset quality. As you can see from the graph, gross non-performing exposure is down quarter on quarter, driven by past due downward trend, which have decreased by 10 million. Net bad loans represents 1% of total loans and is stable both quarter-on-quarter and year-on-year. In line with what we've commented in previous calls, loan loss provisions are higher year-on-year. Part of the increase is a consequence of the update of our impairment model to account for the worsening of the macroeconomic variables. We've also increased the coverage on specific factoring positions over the year and in particular in Q4. So the combined effect has been a 21% increase in loan loss provisions versus last year. As a consequence, cost of risk registered an increase at 42 basis points compared to the 36 basis points for 2019. I now hand the floor back to Gianluca. Thank you.
Thank you. And moving to the slide number 10, regulatory capital. So the regulatory capital core tier 1 ratio and total capital ratio were well above our expectation and the minimum requirement. Vis-a-vis the situation on the result of 2020, in continuity with the past and in line with the approvals of quarterly reports, and taking into account the current and the future COVID-19 related impact on capital strength and on the business growth outlook, the board of directors today has confirmed that we'll propose to the shareholder at the general meeting to retain 75% of the parent company net income, corresponding to 25.7 million. Then, upon discussing with the Bank of Italy, as required by the recommendation issued by regulator, the board of directors will prepare its proposal to be submitted to the shareholders for the part of profit that are not retained as a reserve. In the number of the core tier 1, clearly the 12.6% already consider 75% of the net profit being retained, while the other remaining 25% not been retained. At the same time, talking about the 2019 dividend, also in today's board meeting has been agreed to convene a general shareholder meeting on March 25th to resolve on the 2019 dividend payment for the financial year ended in 2019. As during the general meeting that has been held on the 27th of November of last year, the shareholder has decided to postpone the decision to a new meeting to be called by the end of the first quarter. In the same meeting of today, also the board of directors has also resolved to promptly engage in a dialogue with the regulator about the 2019 dividend. As I said before, we are satisfied with the resilience of our bank, even though the factoring LPI contribution was lower on year-on-year. But commercially speaking, we have registered good performance and also how the net income have allowed to absorb the relevant acquisition this year that will generate profit for next year. Last point is that in March, we will approve our business plan and we will show to you our strategy for the next 3 years. Thank you very much. Now we remain available for any question that you may have. Thank you.
Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their telephone. To remove yourself from the question queue, please press star and two. Please pick up the receiver when asking questions. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. The first question is from Christian Carrese of Intermonte. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a few questions. The first one is on net interest income. This year, of course, due to the COVID-19, we saw a drop in net interest income. So I was wondering if we can look at this year level as a floor in terms of net interest income. And in particular, I would like to understand if you are planning to increase the TLTRO III take up in 2021. And in general terms, also I would like to understand what are your thoughts on Draghi appointment as Prime Minister in terms of possibility to reduce the public administration arrears. And if I'm not mistaken, you worked with Draghi few years ago, so if you can share with us your thoughts on Draghi himself. The second question is on the acquisition. If you can give us some details on the Spanish joint venture in terms of new production and some details. The third question is on asset quality. I saw a decrease in past due in this quarter. What should we expect for 2021 in terms of NPE evolution and in terms of cost of risk? So if you said that maybe you have done some overlays in 2021, overlay provisions, and you also said some specific provisions, some customers in the fourth quarter, so if you can give some details on that. And finally, on capital and dividend, you said that the capital ratio, the full year capital ratio, 12.6%, include 75% retained earnings, but it's not clear to me. The 2019 dividend not paid is still out of this ratio. So if you're not going to pay the 2019 dividend, we should see an increase in the Common Equity Tier 1. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for all the questions. I may take some of the questions, then I will leave maybe to Ilaria the answer to other questions. First of all, about the appointment of Mario Draghi as Prime Minister, let me clarify first on top of everything that I'm very happy to be CEO of Banca Sistema. And at the same time, I'm very happy that to have a good relationship with my former boss that is going to become Prime Minister. In terms of the agenda, based on what are the available information that are not many, the focus of the government will be on getting out of the current situation of vaccination. To speed up the, at least based on what are the information that are available today, is to try to speed up the process for new infrastructure and reduce the bureaucracy in that front. At the same time, the other goal is to use the money of the recovery fund to increase the investment in order to give more breath to the economy, which I think that are good signs for our business, where our business is to allow the company to use the liquidity faster, quicker, by selling a discount the receivable towards the public administration. In terms of the question about Spain, as I mentioned before, this is a joint venture. The joint venture and the company, which is called EBN Sistema, will not take any asset on their balance sheet. So the joint venture has been created to act as introducer, let me use this word, on behalf of the two banks, that the two banks will acquire the asset on a pro rata basis, pari passu. So there's not going to be any privilege or any situation where there could be any conflict among the assets that are going to be purchased, because we will purchase 50% of every receivable or every invoice. So at that front, we will not have any. The two banks are 100% aligned in the purchase, in the evaluation, and in the collection of the receivable. As I mentioned, the Spanish market is much smaller than the Italian market, but we could expect that maybe an amount of 200, 250 million of receivable can come from the Spanish market. Being in particular asset related to the healthcare, the Bank of Spain has clarified that the RWA is 0% of those receivable. The seller are mainly multinational company that are supplier to the healthcare system in Spain, and part or the biggest part of the return will come from LPI. In terms of dividend, and then I'll leave the other two questions to Ilaria. In terms of capital and dividend, it's correct that the core tier one at 12.6% already exclude the 25% of the 2019 dividend, as well as the 25% of the 2020 profit. So in case, for whatever reason, which we don't see today, but the General Assembly decide to cancel the decision to change his decision to allocate as reserve only 75%, and when I use the word only, I think that 75% of net profit being allocated as reserve is an hyper prudent allocation of capital. Because we only distribute in the past 25%, but in case for whatever reason the General Assembly will decide to post also the 25% of amount that are not allocated as reserve, the 12.6% will increase by this amount that will become net asset, which is not the case today. So the 2019 as well as 25% of the net profit of 2020 are not accounted as regulatory capital. In terms of net interest income, before I will leave the answer to Ilaria, but let me say that there's not any correlation between COVID-19 and the reduction of net interest income. So far, I don't see any reason why the situation should change, the performance of the bank was not affected by the COVID-19. There's been some change of mix and so on, but some eventually cost saving because we have people that are not traveling there, so we save some money in terms of travel expenses and so on, but in terms of margin the COVID-19 did not generate any impact on the margin and not even on the NPE or past due. The most relevant item that generate a reduction of NII compared to the past is the LPI. And in particular, among the LPI is the part of accrual. Because as Ilaria mentioned before, after several years where we have adjusted our accrual based on the model that we have in terms of accruing LPI, now we have reached a situation where the level is in line with the expected collection, so we will not have a boost, which in the past typically happened on the third quarter of the year. And this is what, if you compare 2019 with 2020, generate most of the reason of the reduction of NII, which again has nothing to do with COVID-19. But I will leave to Ilaria to further comment and also on the TLTRO that you mentioned, as well as Ilaria, the other question was related to the past due and the cost of risk. Ilaria.
Sure. Yes, in line with what Gianluca mentioned, we don't expect the NII to further decrease next year. Indeed, we expect higher interest income and at the same time lower interest expenses. So I think it's a good indication to take 2020 net interest income as the bottom of in terms of next year outlook. As we mentioned and as Gianluca restated, the two drivers, the two main drivers of the drop in the net interest income this year were the performance of LPI and fiscal receivables. Really, on LPI, for the reasons we mentioned, we don't expect any upside in the future, but on fiscal receivable, we might see some potential upside. So this is why I say that taking 2020 net interest income as the bottom can be a good indication in terms of outlook, because the performance of fiscal receivable might really make the difference between last year and the next year. In terms of drawing under the TLTRO, we don't expect to draw further amounts as we have already reached our maximum allowance at 491 million.
There was maybe some 10% top up that you could do with the change of the rules.
Okay, so I'll get back to you on this point. I think to the best of my knowledge we have already reached our maximum allowance, but we can always get back. There is one upside in terms of potential further drawing from the Eurosystem funding, which is given by the fact that CQ assets since last year have been considered eligible as a collateral. Really, the more we grow the assets origination in the KCQ space, the farther we grow our eligible collateral. So we can always use this additional collateral that becomes available to draw under different sources, for example, the peltro. But we're not planning to increase the TLTRO III. But as I said, we'll get back on this point. In terms of past due, really the performance and the trend of past due in 2020 will be a function of the implementation of the new definition of default approach. We haven't changed our estimate with respect to the last update we gave in the previous call. So we are estimating the impact of the new DoD to be around 70 basis points in terms of CET1 ratio. In terms of loan loss provisions, you're right. We have already set aside enough provisions to reach a comfortable level for 2020. The coverage ratio on our non-performing exposures has increased from the 15.15% at the end of 2020 to 18.7% at the end of at the end of 2019, so last year, to 18.7% at the end of 2020. So this gives us enough buffer to be at a comfortable level, which means, as you correctly pointed out, that the core cost of risk for 2020 should become more should be should get back to levels more in line with what we've seen in the past, which is around 35-36 basis points.
Maybe one just to clarify, because it's been mentioned the new definition of default. There'll still be a range because when we look at the most recent exercise on our asset, if we apply what are the indication provided by the Italian Factoring Association, actually this will have a positive impact on our Core Tier 1 of 20 basis points. If we use other not use that indication, that is where, as Ilaria mentioned, it can have a negative impact that goes from 60 to 70 basis points. But at this stage, this is a range, so it can be even plus 20 basis points down to minus 70 basis points.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The next question is from Manuela Meroni of Intesa Sanpaolo. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, and thanks for the presentation. I have a few questions. The first one is on the new definition of default. Just to be sure, 60-70 basis points is the worst-case scenario for you. So we can expect nothing more than that in terms of impact of the new definition of default. The second question is on dividend. You mentioned some discussion with the regulator on 2019-2020 dividend payment. So I'm wondering at which stage are these discussions and when you expect to have a final outcome on that. And I'm wondering if you feel confident to be able to pay 2019-2020 dividend at least after September 2021. The third question is on margins. Margins are declining both in factoring and CQS year-on-year, but they are stabilizing in the last few quarters. So I'm wondering what we can expect going forward. I would expect some increase in margin in CQS as the direct business should increase, and maybe some further pressure on the factoring due to the increase in tax receivable. But please give me any comment on this. That would be extremely helpful. Then I'm wondering on the pawn business, pawnbroking business, the growth rate of this quarter was very high, 3.6% just in one quarter. I'm wondering what we can expect in 2021. We can assume a double-digit growth for this kind of business. Last question is on the staff cost. Staff cost increased significantly in the last quarter. I'm wondering if we can use this level as a run rate for the next few quarters, or if it has been impacted by some non-recurring items.
Okay. Let me try to take some of the question. First of all, new definition of default. Clearly, we live in a world where it's very difficult to have a black and white situation. We always live in a world of interpretation and, to a certain extent, lack of clarity, depending on the different point of view. Our position, looking at the various possible interpretation, was, as I mentioned, in using the association interpretation is an increase of 20 basis points. Using what we believe is the other worst-case scenario of the interpretation is 70 basis points. As we live in a world of interpretation, as of today, we haven't seen any other possible interpretation that can change from this range. At the same time, who knows what it can be, to a certain extent, the creativity on the various possible interpretation. If at the end of the day, not even the association of all factoring company that include all the banks is considered the correct interpretation. As of today, I would say that for us, the 70 basis point is the worst-case scenario. In term of dividend, just to be clear, today the board decided to call for the general assembly, and today the board will start the dialogue with the regulator. The stage of the discussion will start today in the few hours, I would say. A formal request will be made to the regulator. Where we are at the stage, we are at the stage zero, in a sense that the decision to call the meeting on the 25th has been taken today, 25th of March for 2019, has been taken today. As I mentioned, today, both the 2019 profit has been accounted as a debt in favor of shareholder. It's not being classified as dividend, because in order to have a dividend, you need to define a record date. The record date has not been defined. In our balance sheet, this net income has not been allocated to reserve, is a debt towards shareholders, is not yet defined as a dividend. In order to answer to your question, if we will be able to distribute after September 21, I would say that unless the shareholder will make a change on their decision and will decide to book what are today the amount to be distributed to shareholder as reserve, this amount will be paid to shareholder after September 21. That is where we are in term of dividend. It could end up in a situation where the 2 year dividend of 2019 and 2020 may end up to be fully distributed only in September 2021. So that is that we don't know. It is also important to say that reading the recommendation and it's very difficult to have different interpretation is written crystal and clear that the dividend restriction will not apply if the payment will not cause a reduction of core tier one. And this has been stated in the second recommendation, but also in the last recommendation of the regulator. As in our case, the dividend will not affect the core tier one because the amount has been already deducted from the core tier one. We have to see why we cannot immediately distribute the dividend. As it seems to us, at least, that is not a question of interpretation. It's only a question of reading what is written on the recommendation and nothing else. But let's see if there are different interpretations that need to be also justified. In terms of pawnbroking business, I can confirm that the double-digit growth is also foreseen for 2021. In terms of staff cost increase, bear in mind that with the acquisition, we have increased 58 headcount coming from the acquisition from Intesa. So the increase of staff cost is mainly driven by the this new headcount through the acquisition of Intesa. Ilaria, if you want to comment on the margin,
yeah, sure.
If you'd like to add any other comment also on the other point.
Sure.
We are not in the same room. If you would like to comment, please do it.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I'll add a couple of comments on the expected performance of the pawnbroking business. Just to give you an idea of how the total income has performed in 2020, I can give you the trend among the quarters. So, as we said, the total income generated by the pawnbroking business was 5.8 million over the year, but the construction of the annualized level was the following. We had less than half a million for the first two quarters, and 2 million in the third quarter, and 3 million in the fourth quarter. So really, the quarter that represents the best indication in terms of future outlook is the last one. So if you annualize 3 million total income, you get to a level of 12 million without any growth. So that gives you an indication of what we can expect in terms of income contribution from this business line for 2021. So in terms of the other question, you were asking, Manuel, about margins. Your comment was correct in the sense that what we expect for margins in 2020 is a slight increase in terms of margin for the CQ business, given by the fact that the effect of early prepayment should be a little bit less than what we have seen this year. So we ended up 2020 with an average margin for the business for the CQ business at 2.7%. The same margin was 3.1% at the end of 2019, probably something in the middle, some levels in the middle should be an accurate estimate for 2021. In terms of pawnbroking business, for the first time we disclose the margins. Margins, as we said, are the highest by far among the three business lines. We could expect a further increase by, say, 50 basis points with respect to what we've seen in 2020. The business line, which in terms of margins will suffer probably more or will suffer with respect to, in relative terms, with respect to other business lines, will be the factoring. The reason lies in the fact that, as we said, the future contribution of LPI will not be as much as we as it was in the past. And the upside in terms of marginality will really lie with the performance of tax receivables. So really taking 2020 margins with a little bit downward pressure is a good estimate for 2021. A real upside might be coming from the performance of tax receivables. Forgetting the last question on the tax rate. Yes, as you correctly pointed out, the tax rate was not aligned between the quarters. The correct one to be taken into account is the one for the third and fourth quarter. It was 32% in Q3 and 31% in Q4. This is the correct one to be taken for next year. The second quarter tax rate was affected positively affected by the sale of the 25% stake in the pawnbroking in Pronto Pegno. So really, it's not a good indication for future tax rate.
Thank you.
The next question is from Luigi Tramontana of Banca Akros. Please go ahead.
Yes, good evening and thank you for taking my questions. First one on the Spanish JV. I understand that you are starting from scratch, so there is no portfolio coming from the partner. I imagine that you are going to give us some growth targets, turnover targets in the midterm with your plan next month. Second one is on capital. The common equity ratio went up 60 bps in one quarter. Is there any change in risk weighting there that I'm missing, just to understand? And interestingly, one of your competitors is aligning to your practice in terms of risk weighting, what you have been doing so far, so 20%. And they justify it with the new approach their approach to the new DOT, which is basically zeroing their past dues. So can you please give us some insight on your discussions with the supervisor regarding the new DOT, and what should we expect apart from the impact you detailed on capital in terms of asset quality? Many thanks.
In terms of Spanish portfolio, it's not actually from scratch, because as I said, already in 2020 we purchased some receivable, and these were not one-off portfolio, but these were revolving business. So we will start with a few already client, large client that already have committed to sell the receivable also on an ongoing basis. So while last year it was a start from scratch from us, actually for ABN that was not the case. And indeed, we had some important name that are supplier to the Spanish system that commit to sell receivable on monthly or quarterly basis, and we will continue to buy those receivable on a 50-50 basis, as we were happy with the performance on the collection of those type of receivable. So as I said, this is something that will allow us to add from 200 million to 250 million at least the turnover. It could be even more. It depends on many things, but this is something that is it could be considered a new start from us. Maybe a footnote, it's not the first time that Banca Sistema has bought Spanish receivable. In the past, we already have bought Spanish receivable from Deutsche Bank that was active in the Spanish market. And so we have already the experience on the collection, on the risk connected to those receivable. Now with the ABN Banco, where there is a dedicated division on factoring that take care about public sector factoring as well as private factoring. We are not involved in the private factoring because it's is not for us, but on the healthcare with the, where seller are big pharma company is where we are involved. The reason why there is a upside for both ABN and us is because there are two main reasons. One is we can, in particular with big portfolio, we can allow ABN to even strengthen the relationship with some of the big pharma company that are used to sell a large portfolio. And probably by themselves, they were did not have the strength in terms of liquidity, capital, to take all this big portfolio. Now with 50-50, the firepower has increased. And eventually, in case they may have some limit, we have also agreed that the 50-50 could be changed for some specific portfolio to a different percentage, where, for instance, they will buy 30% and we buy the remaining 70% and so on. But this is today the joint venture simply after the first trial period is the way where we secure a long-term relationship and a convergence of interest. Well, the fact that some of our competitors has a different interpretation on the RWA and that they align with our position, I cannot comment, but certainly is nothing to do with the DOD. So the 20% RWA on the healthcare is something that we did since many years. There's no change in the rules, and there's been rationale why to do that. And this goes back to my previous point that unfortunately it's never been black and white. So it's always a question of looking the rules. And having the interpretation. But in general, let me say one thing. We are in a, if I would like to go to the furthermore, the reason why there are increase of RWA and even driven by the DOD is because the rationale is that a delay of payment is a sign of credit risk coming from the obligor. So when an obligor will not be able to pay on time, the assumption is that this is a sign of an increased risk, which is absolutely understandable when we talk about everything else than the public administration. Because we know all that the public administration is not paying in time because they have an increased risk of default. So if you take the rationale of the European credit directive, the rationale is that an increase of RWA is driven by an increase of risk. But when we talk about public administration, where they always pay, the rationale is something that it seems that is forgiven when there are interpretations. So not surprisingly, you end up on the same matter, even with different interpretation, and maybe not even consider the substance of the issue, because the substance should be that for public administration, probably an increase of RWA in case of late payment doesn't make any sense. If at the end, and this is proven with long-term statistical information, any past due will become a payment anyhow. So a past due in public administration is not becoming a default, but it will become a performing credit because they will pay even late, but they always pay. So there is a big difference between a non-performing loan and a late performing loan. And when people read the regulation, I think that they should always take that into consideration. Otherwise, we will talk about the formal aspect forgiving the substantial point, which is what the increase of RWA means, why there is an increase of need of increasing the RWA. So the fact that some of our competitors have aligned their position is something that we are pleased. I think that the association of the factoring company is doing a great job in the last few years, even before the DOD, to put in together the view of the various bank to also act as a main counterparty with the regulator in the specific matter of the factoring in general, including the factoring with public administration. And the view of the association, I think that should be considered probably the most relevant view, because that includes the position of all legal department, of all risk management people in the various bank. So probably also this point of the RWA of 20% is coming from an alignment coming out from the debate of the various banks that are behind the association. As far as we know, the association is talking with the authority at domestic level as well as at the European level, including the EBA, about certain matter, not only with public administration, but in general connected to the factoring. So this is the view. To be honest, it's very also difficult to be in an environment where rules are from time to time are not clear, and when they may end up to have interpretation of these rules that are against the scope of the principle of the rules itself, which I repeat, you should increase the RWA when there is an increase of risk. If there's not an increase of risk, because at the end the public administration will pay and will also pay 8% of the penalty interest, so there's not even a decline in return, all the conversation, all the discussion, all the debates seems to be more formal than substantial. But we will be more than happy that the Association of Factoring Company will will try to sort it out on behalf of all the members and for the benefit of the entire market, including the supplier to public administration and including the obligor, so the various public administration that certainly will benefit from the fact that there is somebody that is giving liquidity from the market coming from the delay that are mainly driven by bureaucracy rather than issue of risk or liquidity. Consider that the public administration, city, province, region, healthcare, they cannot enter into a bankruptcy procedure. So there is a special procedure which means that they cannot default. A city will be always be there today, tomorrow, and the day after. So it's not a corporate that today is here, tomorrow will disappear.
Thank you, Mr. Garbi, for your explanation. I've been following what Assifact has been doing so far, and I appreciate all that. What I was trying to figure out is, rather than the impact on capital and risk weighting, is the impact on asset quality and, by the way, the cost of risk, given that you have a 30-40 bps cost of risk while this competitor has almost nothing. This is the thing that is surprising me. I understand that interpretation is important, and for the time being you don't have a clear change in the way that the supervisor is looking at you. Anyway, many thanks for that.
Yeah. Well, the fact that we have 30-40 basis points means that probably we are more conservative. And as I mentioned, probably has been mentioned before, one of the driver of the increase is also the model that take into consideration the GDP of the country. And so there is an algorithm that take that into consideration. So there are more amount that is without any specific the impairment, but is a generic impairment increase on the asset. So that is also, I think that the percentage has changed also because in terms of basis point, you do the amount divided by the outstanding. And as has been mentioned before, as during the last part of the year, we receive more payment than expected. The outstanding in factoring has declined, and if the denominator reduces, the percentage in terms of basis point increase. So these are, but in any case, a 30-40 basis point is a conservative, as far as we can see, cost of risk.
Yeah, sure.
And also, if I may add, in terms of impact of the past due on the loan loss provisions, you need to bear in mind that our coverage ratio on the past due is around 1%, a little bit less than 1%. So it has nothing to do with the 18.7% coverage ratio that I mentioned as an average coverage ratio on non-performing exposures, which is really the average of the different coverages for the different buckets. So really, with that coverage ratio in mind, any really increase in past due doesn't really imply any significant increase in loan loss provisions. Then you were asking about the impact or the change in the core tier 1 ratio.
Yes.
Do you want me to cover that, or do you have any comments on
the previous
question?
Any details on the 60 bps increase quarter on quarter?
Yes, absolutely. This is really the combination of different positive effects. There is clearly the positive impact of the net income generation for the quarter. but there is also a positive impact given by the reduction of the default, which we mentioned. There is also a positive impact given by the review of the collateral underlying the gold and jewelry-backed loans positions that we have inherited by Intesa Sanpaolo. Initially, we had taken a very conservative approach in underestimating the percentage of gold underlying the credits, again, as I said, to be conservative. We have performed a review of the collaterals since we integrated the business unit. Out of the 53 million credits that we bought, there is only 60 million still to be revised. The result of this revision of the collateral was positive for the quarter one ratio because we were able to increase the amount, the percentage of gold underlying the credits. There was also another positive effect given by the final allocation of the purchase price of the acquisition, which resulted in a lower goodwill. So all these effects explain why the quarter one ratio moved from the 12% at the end of September to 12.6% at the end of the year. There wasn't any significant change in the RWA density.
Many thanks.
Mr. Garbi, there are no more questions registered at this time.
So thank you very much to everybody. Thank you very much for all the questions. We hope that we were able to answer to all your requests. As you know, as always, we remain available through our IR for any further request of clarification details on the result. So thank you again, and have a good evening to everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.